Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17. By faith, Abraham, we've been looking at that statement a number of times now. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. A few times people have asked me at school, Brother Penn, is this going to be a hard test? And I usually reply, that's why they call it a test. If it's an easy test, it's not a test. That's why when God wanted to test Abraham, he told him to slay his only son. In fact, God said, the son whom thou lovest. That's how God tested Abraham. It ought not surprise us then that if in God's testing of us, God touches the thing that we may have reserved unto ourselves, God may touch the very thing that we have said to God in our prayers, God, please don't touch this. We're all aware of saving faith. That is, we're saved by faith. We know how we're saved. We're saved by grace through faith. But as we've studied these lessons from the 11th chapter of Hebrew, we've been seeing how God not only saves us by faith, but God expects us to live by faith. The just shall live by faith. And we know unless we have faith, we can't please God. I don't think God simply looks down from heaven into our hearts and that he sees faith and says, oh, I see faith, I'm well pleased. Without faith, we will not do the things that please God. We will draw back. Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. In order for us to pass the test that we're involved in every hour of every day, and then to pass that one test, the test such as Jesus had in the temptation, and the test such as Abraham has here when God asked him to offer his son, his only son, the son whom thou lovest, as an offering and sacrifice. Without faith, we'll just not do the things that really honor God, that really glorify God, because faith is the basis of our obedience to God. Living by faith is not a dispensational doctrine. Living by faith isn't something that the Old Testament saints were supposed to possess in order for them to do these heroic exploits that are mentioned in the book of Hebrews. These are mentioned to show that they lived their lives by faith, and we must also live our lives by faith. And as by faith they passed the test that God presented to them, and that by test they obeyed, and that by faith they obeyed when God spoke. These are examples to us. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried, when it was tested. It's an assayer's word. It comes from assaying metal. Whenever ore is tested to see if it has gold or what content of silver it may possess, that ore is crushed, placed in containers, strong acids are applied to it, fire is applied to it. Sometimes temperatures below anything we might ever imagine are placed, or it's placed in that. And all of this to see how it responds so that we know the content of it. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, when he was examined by Almighty God under the fire, in the fire, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. That's his response. When Abraham was tested, when it was said of him to go and offer your son, thine only son, Isaac, the son that whom thou lovest, that was the test, and the response was, Abraham offered up Isaac. He offered him as a sacrifice, and the wording of it indicates that in his mind, that is in the mind of Abraham, when God said, do it, Abraham had already done it in his mind. And he that had received the promises, that is Abraham, who had gladly received the promises of God, who welcomed and cherished the divine challenge and charge of God that through him would come and through him there would continue that line of the faithful that would produce the Christ child, God's anointed. And Abraham received the promise of God, and he received it with joy. Though he was challenged by it, he still accepted it and believed this. This man who had joyfully made God's promises own, offered up his only begotten son. It was not the only son he had, but it was the only son that he had that was a faith child. We would consider him a miraculous child, a child of a miracle. The only one of a kind. He had other sons, but this was the only son of this kind that was a product of God's divine intervention and strengthening. And it was the son whom through God had promised that in this son his seed would be called, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, even to whom it was said, through Isaac shall your descendants be named. This is the seed singular that Paul wrote of in the book of Romans. I think in order for us to comprehend what Paul is writing, we ought to briefly look at the offering of Isaac by Abraham. This is recorded in the 22nd chapter of Genesis, and I realize this has been a part of our Sunday school lesson for several weeks now, but let's refresh our memory. Brother Polk read the first three verses of chapter 22. It has the command of God to take your only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him there, that is, Mount Moriah, as an offering, as a burnt offering. Abraham's response to God's command was to rise up early in the morning and to split the wood for the burnt offering. And they departed for Mount Moriah. Near its base, they stopped. And Abraham said to the servants, I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and we shall come again unto you. And there again is Abraham's faith demonstrated in the statement, and we shall return, indicating that I'm taking my son up on Mount Moriah to fulfill God's command to me. And after I've done that, we'll come back down the mountain. Here again is an evidence of Abraham's faith that he believed that whatever he did, because God said do it, he'd never lose. I don't know where Abraham learned that lesson, but he had learned it. It was a part of his faith that whatever is laid on the altar for God is never lost. And Abraham built an altar there. He laid the wood in order. Very deliberate act. What father of us would not have been nervous, agitated, fearful, frustrated, doubtful? Perhaps just throwing the wood haphazard, hoping to get this thing over with as soon as we could. Yet Abraham laid the wood in a purposeful fashion. He bound Isaac and laid him on the altar. And he took the knife to slay his son. Typically, he would have cut his throat and the blood would have spilled upon the altar, and then it would have been burned. And Abraham took the knife and he raised his hand with a knife in it. He intended to slay Abraham. But then God spoke, lay not thine hand upon the lad. And Abraham did what God said. And that's faith. That's faith. To do what God says. He heard God speak and he believed what God said. And God provided. A ram was caught in the thicket by the horns. And this was the substitute that Abraham offered instead of his only son. His only begotten son, the son whom thou lovest. And God praised Abraham and said, because thou hast done this and hast not withheld thine only son, that in blessing will I bless thee. When our Western minds think of such a circumstance, I think all of us recoil in horror. How could a father slay his only son? How could he take that son from his home? How could he ride with him or walk with him along in joyful companionship? How could he stand even to look at his wife whom he leaves? How could he stand to even share anything with his son whom he will now do according to God's command? How could he even bear himself? Why is he not filled with loathing, and why does he not detest the God who demands so much? Seems so reprehensible an act. And as part of Abraham's faith, an attestation to his faith, the Bible doesn't record any questions. I think it would have been a very typical response to have just begun to ask questions, don't you? Well, God, what do you mean by slay? God, what do you mean by burnt offering? God, what do you mean by Mount Moriah? God, what do you mean? God, what do you mean? I'm not clear on exactly the idea that you have. What What specifically, God, could you make this a little clearer to me? I'm really confused, God. I don't quite understand. Is this parabolic? Is it figurative? Or do you literally mean, God? And if you do, then please, God, give me a sign. I'm not able, oh God, to obey simply because you've said, God, give me some sign. God, show me so that I'll never doubt. God, show me so that I'll never second guess. And like the Pharisees and Sadducees said of Jesus, speak plainly. Speak plainly. Isn't it human-like that when we're challenged of God, to challenge God back? That when God says, go do, that we're tempted to say, only if. When God says for us to make our sacrifices, then are we not prone to ask God, and if I do, dear God, what will you do? What will be your part in this, God? Abraham asked no such questions. He didn't even ask God to repeat it, to say it again. Per communications of World War II, Hitler sent a message to the generals who occupied Paris. Burn Paris. And then occasionally he would send other transmissions. Is Paris burning? The generals ignored the command, claiming that the transmissions were unclear and they didn't understand. I'm thankful that they did that. But God's transmissions to us are clear. They were to Abraham, and Abraham understood, and Abraham accepted, and Abraham obeyed. And we have to ask ourselves, on what basis? What is the foundation of his decision? What one thing did Abraham hang his act upon? The Bible tells us in verse 19, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. This word accounting here has in it the idea of a calculation. To add things together. And when we add things together to arrive at an answer, I don't know how many things Abraham added together in order to come up with his answer. But I guess you could just begin to add up all the attributes of God. Should I do this? The answer is, add the omniscience of God. He is an all-knowing God. Add the omnipresence of God, add the omnipotence of God, add the mercy of God, add the wisdom of God, add up all these characteristics, and after this calculation, we have gained the faith to do what God says. He calculated and reckoned on the basis of firm evidence. The word denotes strong inward conviction and persuasion. And it reflected a very reliable opinion, an opinion that Abraham evidently had come to more times than this. And he accounted that God was able, that he had power to raise up, to cause to rise up. He believed that God could raise his son up even if his son were dead. That is the calculated answer to which Abraham came when he added up his prior knowledge and prior experiences with Almighty God. He just sat down and counted how God had been with him in his lifetime. And the answer was, God's able. A few of the lessons that we should learn is, again, that repeated statement that I hope all of us will remember for the rest of our lives, and that is, the just shall live by faith. A specific command of God, not dispensational in its application. And also remember that God will test our faith. And the faith that God tests is not always great faith. I believe the Bible teaches that if we have it, God will test it. And we're always tempted to ask why. And I would reply, that's God's business. And we're always tempted to ask how. And again, I say that too is God's business. But if we have faith, and if God tests our faith, and we pass that test that God has laid upon us and allowed to happen in our lives, we are assured by the God who tests us that God will reward our faith if we have it and God tests it and our response pleases Him, then God will reward us for our faith. And again, we are tempted to ask how or what. And again, I can only answer by saying, I know not. Living by faith means that we learn God's way. Living by faith, we learn how God operates, and through this we learn to trust God. And then when a crisis comes, when a severe testing falls upon us, because we have already been living by faith, then we are equipped to meet that crisis. I think that's why Jesus taught us to pray, give us this day our daily bread. To accept by faith the daily provender of God, and to acknowledge God's instrumentality in the giving of our daily bread equips us for the time when famine strikes. And it seems that there will be no bread. For we have all the days to count that God has given us bread. But if we, in our assumption that we have, by the sweat of our face, earned our bread without God's divine intervention, and we account our provender to our wisdom and to our hard work, then when a crisis occurs, when there is no bread, then we're tempted to say, how can God set a table in the wilderness? You see, this is exactly what had happened to Israel as a nation. They took the manna that God gave every day. And if they accepted that daily provender by faith, they knew that whenever God requested them to do some extraordinary act, they had that as a basis that they could count up and use and say, we know that God has done it daily, so God will do it as He speaks and reveals that He will do it. In the crises of life that seem to really hurt, and I use that word just because I don't know what other word to say, it seems that the tests that are the most difficult are the tests that involve people. And that makes the tests of God so very, very difficult. It seems that somehow, some way, we want to say, but God, not the child. God, not right now. Not the child. God, not the wife. Oh, God, not the wife. Or to say, oh, God, not the husband. Not the husband, God. Not the husband with these children. God, not that. God, not the mother. Not the Father, not now. God, I'm so destitute. Dear God, I need them so badly. I hurt so deeply. Dear God, not Mama, not Daddy, not sister, not brother. Oh, God. And we weep with the patriarchs of old. Oh, Absalom, my son Absalom. Oh, that I had died and not thee. The test. The test. The test. The trial. The grief. The sorrow. What will we do? How will we respond? In the fire and in the flood. Day by day we have said, or have we? And I've noticed this in my life, and I think you have noticed it in your life. That if we apply that principle, give us this day our daily bread, then to do without bread is easier. And to say, day by day, to those whom we love, I love you. It is easier to give them up. It seems that when we reserve our love and withhold our love and forget to express our love and to acknowledge our debt of love, that it causes so much more grief when test comes. I think Abraham day by day had thanked God for Isaac. And that the promises that God had made to him, that in this son whom thou lovest would be the hope of the faith generation, that Abraham exulted in this wonderful thing that God had done for him and Sarah, his wife, his beautiful wife. How God had so blessed them and how they rejoiced in what God had done for them because of the prior commitment they had made to God. The circumstances of the child's birth, that Abraham was able to pass the test, and for God to say, with blessing, I will bless thee. The just shall live by faith. Exercise your faith every day. Have faith that God can, that God will, and carefully watch for displays of God's grace, of His, and expressions of how He's fulfilled that faith. Live by faith every day. And then when the crises occur, you will be equipped then to continue to exercise faith and have faith. If we live in our own self-righteousness, our own power, then all of a sudden we have it no longer. And then it's so difficult to change over and try to live by faith. It creates so many, many problems. Live by faith so that when the tests come, we can pass the test by faith. Our musicians will come and let us stand together. And as they're coming, may I remind you that this invitation is a time when you may respond to God's command or to God's teaching, God's training, to God's will in your life.